it isn't necessarily the diagnosis. They could have an autoimmune disorder. They could have diabetes. They could have heart disease. If you get the foundations in place and you optimize somebody's basic health, you can get them to respond to other therapies a lot better.
You're listening to the Holistic Nootropics Podcast, your home for holistic, evidence-based cognitive enhancement strategies. And now your host, Eric Levi.
Hey, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Holistic Nootropics Podcast, where we discuss holistic cognitive enhancement. My name is Eric, the Holistic A-Hole. I'm a functional nutritional therapy practitioner. And today on the podcast, I have Dr. Tracy Trancatella. Dr. Trancatella is a doctor of naturopathic medicine, integrating the scientific principles of functional medicine with the sensibility and holistic view of traditional naturopathy. She provides naturopathic consultations for general health issues, including digestive disorders, blood sugar management, autoimmune disorders, cardiovascular disease and metabolic disorders, chronic fatigue, hormone and menstrual issues, and general dietary and nutritional consultations. With each patient, Dr. Trancatella emphasizes a balanced whole food diet coupled with important lifestyle strategies for stress management, quality sleep, regular exercise, and making time for the things that bring joy to our lives. And this is really what Dr. Trancatella and I discuss a lot during this podcast. You know, we talk about things like circadian rhythm and the importance of understanding your circadian rhythm and balancing that with your environment and making sure you get good quality sleep, the importance of understanding how your HPA axis and stress response works, understanding how this affects things like your hormones and your blood sugar, and then, of course, the importance of diet. And granted, reading Dr. Trancatella's bio there, I didn't say anything about mental health, but the beauty of the type of medicine that she practices is that all of the things that we discuss in this podcast that are more physiological, she uses that to affect the psychological. She uses optimizing things like sleep and diet and your body's stress response because she knows that this directly affects your mental health and your brain optimization. We know that anxiety comes from dysregulated stress response and dysregulated sleep. We know that depression comes from the gut. We know that neurotransmitters are made in the gut. And we know that depression comes from things like inflammation, which stem from the gut, and also your stress response. And this is what we talk about. And this is what's so amazing about naturopath doctors like Dr. Tracy Trancatella, because they use the whole body to get at the mind. And when you optimize the body, you can optimize the mind. So we have an amazing conversation around these topics and really go deep to try to suss out these details and figure out things that people can do, that you, dear listener, can do to optimize your brain by, again, optimizing your body. Now, if you enjoy the podcast, all the show notes, including the links and references to everything we discuss, can be found at holisticnootropics.com/podcast. Also, if you are new to the podcast, please remember to subscribe and leave a nice review on whatever podcast platform you're listening to this to. If it's Apple Podcasts, it's super easy to do there. The other ones, I don't know how you do that, but you know, they got tutorials all online. I'm sure that you can figure that out. But at least subscribe and stay up to date on the regular podcast that we put out every single week. And again, if you are new and you want to learn more about using supplements, diet, and lifestyle to hack your brain for peak performance, check out holisticnootropics.com. And with no further ado, everybody, please enjoy my podcast today with Dr. Tracy Trancatella.
I was always interested in nutrition. And so that was my first love because I became aware at an early age, you know, how food made me feel and the quality of the food that I was eating and looking at the people around me and the choices that they were making. And so I started reading a lot of books and I was probably about 13 or so when I was doing this. I also had one of my aunts was very influential in guiding me through this whole process of becoming interested in natural medicine and natural health. And I had no awareness at that age of naturopathic medicine. I didn't even know that it existed. But my first love was nutrition. So when I went to college, I wanted to study nutrition. But at that time, that was probably like 30 some years ago, the jobs that were available for nutritionists, as they said in the college catalog, was you could work for a hospital or you could work for the airline industry. And I was like, well, that's not at all what I'm interested in. Why would I want to just be measuring grams of carbs and fats and proteins and putting together so-called visually balanced meals? That isn't what nutrition meant to me. And so I kind of backed out of that, and I ended up going into like elementary education, and I met my husband, and he was going to medical school, and I was always just very interested in the medical sciences. You know, I'd love to just sit there and listen to him and his fellow students just talk about medicine and what they were learning. And so I eventually went to a lecture that was given by a naturopath when we were up in Portland, Maine. And she had some brochures on the back table about naturopathic medicine. And it was like this aha moment, because it was like, this is what I've been looking for. This has Nutrition Plus. You know, it's sort of like an alternative medical school with an emphasis on nutrition and whole foods and staying healthy and preventing disease. And that's where my interest really was. So I went about looking into the naturopathic medical schools. And at that point, there was a new college in Arizona, Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine. It had only existed for about a year at that point. And so when it came time for my husband to do his internship, he chose to intern down in Arizona so that I could go to school and start my naturopathic medical training. So it was a long process of trying to find what I was really interested in, but at its core, I feel naturopathic medicine offer so much more than just looking at things from a nutritional standpoint. It's really, to me, is sort of like, at its heart, it is really functional medicine in its origination, how we look at the body. It's just that functional medicine now has taken the view of naturopathic medicine and kind of given it more of a scientific basis and structure. So the two meld together really well.
Yeah, I've actually really gotten into the idea of naturopathic medicine in the last couple years. You know, I mean, I've always kind of been into this more alternative type medicine or this alternative type treatment, because I'm one of the people that the mainstream medical system failed, you know?
Right.
And I think it only takes so many times that you try to take the magic pill and you realize that the magic pill just isn't delivering the magic that you want. Mm-hmm. And then you start to say, well, there's gotta be an answer. And I think maybe now the process is different. You know, now you jump on a Google and you just start trying to figure stuff out yourself. And what I keep coming back to is it seems that maybe the naturopaths don't have the answer, but they have a place to start. And that's why I really like it.
Right. Well, and I would agree. I mean, we take a different approach. We understand where conventional medicine comes in and can be very useful. And I think there's more of a merging of the fields of medicine, because we realize that, you know, every aspect of medicine can have its shortcomings. And if we can just have an open and honest conversation about which branch of medicine and is useful in certain circumstances, where we really excel, if we can come together and merge our efforts, we can be that much better. And, you know, when it comes to naturopathic medicine, it takes a broad foundational view of your health to look at what's going on in each of your systems. What are you eating? How are you sleeping? Are you getting enough exercise? Do you manage your stress well? What's going on in your life that may be putting you at risk for certain diseases or disorders? What is your family history or your potential genetics? So there's so many things that we can take as a knowledge base and put that together and be very foundational in how we approach health for somebody and getting them well. You know, it isn't necessarily the diagnosis, but how we approach getting people well, because that's very foundational. That foundational approach could be the same regardless of somebody's diagnosis. They could have an autoimmune disorder. They could have diabetes. they could have heart disease. We're going to start with a lot of the foundations to optimize their health and optimize function so they can function better at all levels, regardless of the diagnosis. And so you remove a lot of that extraneous stuff that may be contributing to ill health to begin with by taking a foundational approach. And then what's left over is maybe what you have to have more targeted therapy and what you focus on. But if you get the foundations in place and you optimize somebody's basic health, you can get them to respond to other therapies a lot better.
And when you say foundations, exactly what do you mean by that?
So foundations are the things that like go back to the basics of obviously nutrition. You're a nutritionist and you focus a lot on diet, nutrition, the quality of the food that you're consuming. You know, there are several different great diets out there, but none of them are going to work if you're consuming poor quality food within the structure of some diet, whether it's paleo, whether it's keto, whether it's gluten-free, casein-free, or a GAPS diet, or any of the number of diets out there. If the quality of the food that you're consuming is of poor quality, none of those diets are going to be good for you. So diet and quality of food, I think, is important. The amount of sleep that people get every night. You know, I've been reading this book. It's called The Circadian Code. And I mean, I've always been interested in circadian and annual rhythms, biological rhythms, chronobiology, and the timing of events. We all have like this clock ticking away in our body. It's how we track time, how we mark the passage of time, which I think is really cool because it puts us back into this natural environment and a connection to the world. We, for the most part, feel so removed from our environment. We feel removed from the seasons. We feel removed from the transition of day to night. We feel removed from temperature. And so all of these things that are environmental can have an influence on our physiology. And there's a way that those events are timed in a circadian rhythm that follows the pattern of light and dark. And there's a lot of other things that relate to that cycle as well, like the foods that we consume, when we can best digest our food, when we should be active, when we should be sleeping, when we should be in darkness. And when we go against those basic physiological, very primitive principles of who we are as beings on this earth, we get sick. So that's very foundational. Stress management, I think, is foundational. Gut function, digestive function, you know, which is related to the foods that we consume, controlling inflammation. To me, those are very foundational.
The Circadian Code. I'm going to put a link to that in our show notes. That sounds like a book. I definitely want to check that out. Right. It's so interesting you're talking about circadian rhythm because that has been at the front of my consciousness for the last year since I've been living here in Puerto Rico. I mean, I moved from New York City to Puerto Rico. It's like all of a sudden I can't keep my eyes open past 9 o'clock at night. I'm waking up at six, no matter what. And then my body's just kind of working differently. My stress response is different.
You know, I first became aware of that as a component of looking at other biological rhythms. Not that I wasn't aware of it, but I had gone to this conference many years ago. It was a hormonal conference, and it was about something called the Wiley Protocol. And she had written a couple books. One of them was called Sex, Lies, and Menopause, and the other one was called Lights Out, and it was about sleep. But she writes it, she was writing from the perspective of an anthropologist and looking at biological rhythms and earth rhythms. And to me, I was like, wow, you know, that's so fundamental to who we are as human beings. And we need to really look at that and work with our patients and clients at that level by asking them, you know, what time do you go to bed at night? You know, are you sleeping in a dark room? What are you doing when you get up in the morning? Do you keep all of the blinds shut in your house? When do you get full spectrum light exposure? When do you get that exposure into your eyes and to shut down that melatonin production and help cortisol to come up? We have to pay attention to those natural rhythms and try to live our lives accordingly so that we can set our own biological rhythm. So we're not off when it comes to that, because to me, that is really foundational. So, you know, getting people to pay attention to those things, to tracking their sleep, to tracking their screen time. We are so, especially now since most people are working from home, we're in front of our computers a lot. So we're looking at screens, we're looking at our phones, we're looking at the TV, we're watching the news, we're on our computers. And as you say, like gazing at long distances, you know, most of the time we're looking at something that is literally 18 inches from our face. And so our eyes become weakened as a result of that. So going outside and gazing into the distance, if we can do that. People who live in open spaces have that opportunity more so than people who live in more confined spaces, like you living in New York. You know, you don't get to have that long expansive view unless it's probably down a long street. So, you know, there's so much to be said for just acknowledging and observing nature and trying to put yourself back in it.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I've been tracking my sleep with an Oura ring for the last couple months. And, you know, at first I didn't want to buy into the hype because I've heard about it so much. And then, you know, it's kind of simple and it's not a great activity tracker, but man, like when you really start to dive in past the data and look at your deep sleep and your REM sleep, and then you compare it to, you know, I compare it to what did I eat that day? What time did I go to bed? And you start seeing patterns, you know, you start seeing like when I have alcohol, my deep and REM sleep is gone. If I go to bed, now I have like a bedtime, you know, it's like being 16 again. I have a bedtime again. Right. And cause I'm like, if I don't go to bed at that time, then I know I'm not going to get the deep and REM sleep. And like I said, I can't sleep past a certain time anymore. So I think the ability to track, so technology, it's like a double-edged sword. It's like, yes, it's drawing us to our screens and driving us crazy. But at the same time, some really interesting technologies coming out that allow us to, I hate to use this word, but biohack, really kind of hack in and kind of optimize, you know, your mind and body.
Well, you can be your own personal study that way. You don't necessarily have to rely on some outside source to, you know, go to a sleep clinic or something like that to gather that kind of data. You can do it from the comfort of your own home. And just because you're doing it doesn't mean you have to do it forever. What you're doing is you're tracking experiences and sleep quality and all of those things to see what works for you so that you can plug that in. You're trying on different things to say, okay, what are my patterns? What are my cycles? I think as humans, we're going to be all very similar, but we all have our own individual preferences and little things that we have to adhere to for ourselves to get a good night's sleep, for example. But, you know, just being aware of it and using that personal data is how we can improve our health at a very fundamental level, you know, and, you know, to take advantage of that, I think is great in this day and age.
One thing I did want to ask you about here, you know, we're talking about the interplay of something like melatonin and cortisol. And cortisol, I'm having more and more conversations and understanding cortisol more and more, you know. I think it's interesting because it's demonized, but it's also so necessary. But in our day and age, it's so dysregulated in people. And I believe that comes from a foundational issue as well. So maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Well, so cortisol patterns follow the diurnal pattern. So they're highest in the morning and they taper as the day goes on. And they have an opposite pattern to melatonin output. You know, melatonin starts to rise 2 to 3 hours before we go to bed. It usually peaks around 2 a.m. and then it starts to taper off when cortisol is supposed to come up and are readiest for activity. So it starts, cortisol is a glucocorticoid hormone, which means it mobilizes sugar so that you have energy to tackle what's ahead of you. And it's also responsible for that fight or flight response that we feel when we feel stressed, because this fight or flight response is a very primitive mechanism that readies us to either fight or flee. But our stressors today are a lot different than they were way back when. And so that, unfortunately, that primitive mechanism that mobilizes sugar so that we can deal with a stressor isn't always required. So that sugar that we mobilize gets stored as fat instead of being utilized, because usually the stress is something that is more psychological It is more of a psychological stress, work-related stress, emotional stress that is more internalized. And you can't always, you know, do something physical to work that out because that's not where the stress is coming from. So it can, when you say that it could be demonized if it's used incorrectly and if we have inappropriate stress responses. And so as part of like the sleep component, that's the thing that we can address and track and try to improve so that our body can rest and rejuvenate so that we have a better stress response. You want to make sure that when you are igniting that stress response, it's appropriate to the stressor. And that it's not going to require a big dump of sugar into your bloodstream because elevated cortisol also is correlated with elevated insulin levels. And people can become insulin resistant if they're mobilizing sugar because of that stress response. And that's where that like increased belly fat comes in. You know, when you, as an extreme example, when you see somebody who is on steroid medication, if they're on prednisone or something because they have a chronic inflammatory condition, they have a physical look about them that says they're overloaded on steroids. Their face gets really round, they get a dowager's hump, and they have a lot of belly fat. And their arms and their legs are skinny because they're kind of eating up the protein of their muscles and they're redirecting adipose to their belly. And so they have this look of having increased belly fat. And that can happen if you're mobilizing a lot of cortisol due to an inappropriate stress response. And that stress response is going to be attenuated based on the quality of your sleep. Because if you're not sleeping well, your ability to appropriately respond to a stressor physiologically is going to be hampered. It could be overdone. And you just kind of recycle this problem. It becomes a circular problem where throughout the day, you're increasing your cortisol output and then you can't sleep at night because you're so jacked up on cortisol and those rhythms are completely off and unbalanced. And so, you know, I do a lot with people with adrenal fatigue. I do salivary adrenal testing where we're doing 4 times saliva measurements throughout the day to look at that diurnal pattern. But I always talk to them about sleep. What is the quality of your sleep? When do you go to bed? We talk about sleep hygiene because you're not going to get that stress response and HPA axis under control if somebody is not sleeping well. So, you know, cortisol is really important because it also, it's produced by the adrenals. So the adrenals are part of your endocrine system. And as part of this system, where you have the hypothalamus, the pituitary, the thyroid, the adrenals, and the gonadal tissue, they're connected as a system. So what is happening in one gland is going to have an influence over the other glands. So when you have a poor stress response, it will affect sex hormones and it will affect thyroid hormones. So I like to do a complete evaluation of people by looking at adrenal hormones, thyroid hormones, and gonadal hormones, because that gives me a good picture of what is going on at a very basic metabolic level.
Yeah, the concept of adrenal fatigue is so wild, and it feels like something that can be so easily mismanaged, you know, and I think so many people suffer from it who don't even know, you know, just like the classic wired and tired. You know, I talk to so many people who it's like, oh, I wake up in the morning and I'm tired and then I try to go to sleep at night and I can't fall asleep. And it's, and to me, the first thing I'm thinking is you just have, you have dysregulated HPA axis response. You know, you're shooting out these, you know, cortical releasing, CRT?
Yes. You got CRH.
CRH.
ACTH is stimulated up in the pituitary. And, you know, so all of this, it's a feedback. You know, we know the endocrine system works on a feedback loop, right? So the output feeds back to the gland that stimulated the production in the first place to say, you got a good response, so you tone down the stimulation on the gland. So that's how it's supposed to work. And that's where it can become dysregulated or completely downregulated where it's, you're not able to respond to a stressor.
Right. So if you have somebody then who has a diet high in sugar, let's say, mm-hmm. right? Because the cortisol works along the whole biological purpose of cortisol is to mobilize sugar to get it to fat or to get it to muscle.
Your body. Yeah.
Right. To run from a tiger, to fight mm-hmm. or flight, you know? So the question I have is then, does that also work for somebody who has a high sugar or high carbohydrate diet or a carbohydrate diet in that their body breaks these things down, it turns into sugar in the body. And now you almost kind of create that feedback where the sugar mm-hmm. comes in. Now the insulin comes in, it delivers it. Now you have a quick drop in sugar, like a high glycemic situation. And then the cortisol is going to come in because it's got to lift the sugar back up. And now you've just elicited a cortisol response, and then you shoot that feedback loop off again. Is that mm-hmm. kind of on the right track?
When you think about stressors, most people think about like mental, emotional stress. They don't think about physiological stressors. And so dysregulated blood sugar is a physiological stressor. And so again, getting back to the basics of a good diet, because that does have an effect on metabolism and maintaining stable blood sugar, because that's a priority. Your brain really only functions off of carbohydrates. It can utilize ketones from fat breakdown, but it's a priority to keep your brain going. So anything that supports that is going to happen, and everything else is going to be secondary. So when somebody is eating a high-carb processed food diet where they're jacking up their blood sugar, you're going to get this major flood of insulin to try to get that sugar out of the blood and either use it as energy or store it as fat. And because of that surge of insulin, you're going to get like a reactive hypoglycemia. As you were saying, your blood sugar is going up and down because of the dietary choices. So when the blood sugar goes down in a response to reactive hypoglycemia, cortisol is going to go up again, and you're going to stimulate that insulin response. You're going to break down your sugar stores. You're going to flood your blood with insulin to try and get that sugar into the cells to be used. And this could be back and forth. And then people experience that hypoglycemia, and what do? They go for more sugar or something more sweet. And that's kind of like your body telling you, I'm in trouble. I need something quick. And your brain makes the correct interpretation that you need some sugar. It's just that it shouldn't get to that point. That's the problem. It shouldn't be up and down like that.
Hey, everybody. Just wanted to take a second to break away from the podcast to tell you about my favorite pre-formulated nootropic stack. That is MindLab Pro. I look at MindLab Pro kind of like a nootropic multivitamin. If you're a nootropic newbie, this is a great nootropic stack to start with. Even if you're an experienced nootropic user, maybe you've been putting together your own kind of different stacks using different nootropics together, and maybe you've hit a plateau, maybe you just haven't found the one that works right for you. Maybe you found something that worked right, and then you try to pair it with something else, and the whole thing kind of fell apart, and then that original nootropic doesn't work for you. MindLab Pro is pre-formulated. It's made by scientists, so they actually pre-formulate it with the right amounts, the right ingredients, 11 research-backed nootropic ingredients, by the way, that are proven to help boost your cognition, your memory, your focus, your mood, all those benefits you look for out of a nootropic, especially a nootropic stack, you're going to get with MindLab Pro. You've got acetylcholine, which is going to boost your acetylcholine production. It's going to boost dopamine. It's going to boost your focus. It's going to boost your memory, your processing speed. You've got phosphatidylserine, which is going to help you with nerve growth factor. It's got glucose metabolism enhancement. You've got the modulation of the HPA axis. It's going to help your energy levels. It's going to help your mood. It's going to help your stress levels, which is so important. You've got Bacopa monnieri. You've got rhodiola, an amazing adaptogenic herb. You got one of the most popular nootropic or holistic nootropics out there, lion's mane mushroom. You're getting that nerve growth factor, literally growing new brain, promotes healthy brain cell function. So so many amazing benefits from lion's mane. You've also got things like maritime pine bark extract, and of course, N-acetyl L-tyrosine, which is going to help boost dopamine levels, and of course, norepinephrine levels. So if you need a boost in mood, if you're dealing with some depression, if you just need to be a little bit more lively, let's say you're kind of falling apart going out in social situations, assuming you're breaking your social distancing, you're going out, you need a little N-acetyl L-tyrosine. And then of course, one of the classic great nootropics, L-theanine, hit that alpha brainwave, get into flow. If you're trying to pair something with coffee to take the edge off a little bit, or if you're just getting rid of caffeine in general, L-theanine is a great nootropic amino acid. And then you have the cofactors, the B vitamins to help really put everything together, B6, B9, B12, you know, it's like you can have all these amazing nootropics together, but if you don't turn on the fire, if you don't stir the pot, that's what the B vitamins do. They help get everything together so that it's metabolized, it hits your brain, it works the way it's supposed to do. Right now, we have a deal with MindLab Pro directly through holisticnootropics.com. You get 3 months of MindLab Pro with an extra fourth month for free. Just go on over to holisticnootropics.com/MindLab Pro. Again, holisticnootropics.com/MindLab Pro. Get one free month of MindLab Pro with the purchase of 3. You can't beat this deal. The nootropic multivitamin, MindLab Pro, my favorite. Okay, let's get back into the podcast. This is why the first place I start with people is I say never eat sugar or carbs in the morning, because that's when your cortisol is highest, and then that's when it's going to get broken down in fat. And it's like, you know, I mean, my entire life up until a couple of years ago, it was like sugar in the morning, cereal, right? You know, especially you walk around New York and it's like, I mean, there's these stands with bagels and donuts and, you know, croissants and everything. And it was getting into nutrition is when I realized like, oh my God, carbs are everywhere. We are literally living in Willy Wonka's chocolate factory. You know, you walk around and it's just like pastries and sugar, and they're just like, eat it first thing in the morning. And then you wonder why it's like people have all of these anxiety and ADHD issues and all these things, because they just have a constant surge of panic from cortisol just being fired off all throughout the morning.
It's the circular problem that I talked about. And it's sort of like, okay, so we know this is a problem leading to another problem, leading to another problem, leading back to the original problem. So where do we jump in on this? You know, so doing salivary testing, I think, is great because it gives, you can probably, when you talk to somebody enough, you already know what it's going to look like by taking a history from them. But it's great objective data to lay it out and to point out to them, this is what's happening. And based on your history, your dietary history, and everything that you're doing to yourself, this is what is resulting. And so it serves as a great learning tool. When people see it on paper and numerically, they kind of get it. It reduces it down to some numbers, and you can basically tell them, okay, by looking at their pattern, you can tell them, you know, what their energy level is like during the day. And they look at you and they're like, oh my God, you're right. I do get that afternoon drop off. I feel like I could really take a nap. And then, you know, sometime after dinner around 9:30 or 10, I get a second wind and then I can't go to sleep. And you're like, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we need to intervene at that level so that sleep is better, energy is better. You're not desiring, like what you're saying about carbohydrates, they're so easy to consume and they come in so many forms. And you know, they're so readily available. And then, you know, when you crash from that, don't worry, Starbucks is right around the corner. Mm-hmm. And then you get your coffee and then your sleep is further dysregulated, even though you feel kind of tired, you're jacked up. And to your point, what you were saying about alcohol, I find this interesting because a lot of people drink alcohol to relax. And so they do feel relaxed initially because it increases GABA in the brain. And so you have that initial reaction, but alcohol is processed like sugar. So it passes through the liver and it's processed very quickly. It messes with your blood sugar. And so it may get you to sleep. You sort of go to sleep in your little, you know, buzzed stupor, but probably an hour or two later, you're going to wake up and not have a very good night's sleep because of the alcohol, because of the way the sugar was processed. So, you know, and going back to like the other physiological stressors, when you're evaluating a patient, not only is the blood sugar an issue, but looking at gut function, digestion, food allergies, anything that could be promoting inflammation. because inflammation triggers cortisol too. It's your body's own anti-inflammatory, really. And so you're going to trigger cortisol release if you're in a state of inflammation to try to suppress this reaction, because inflammation is at the core of just about every disease process. And our body does have mechanisms to try to keep that under control. But putting out a lot of cortisol to try to control this random inflammatory process is not the best way to go about it. You have to look for the source of the inflammation, whether it's gut infections, it could be bacterial, parasitic, yeast, or you could just have gluten sensitivity or other food sensitivities that need to be teased out and cleared away so that the body can deal with the inflammation. The other thing is, as we had talked about sleep, you know, sleep, as we said, is such an important thing, but, you know, mental, emotional stressors, it's so hard to get people to acknowledge that the response they may be having is an overreaction because they're used to how they react to things and it's just normal for them. You know, so getting people to really take a moment to tune into their physiology, their body. How does their body feel right now? Or do you have butterflies in your stomach? Are you breathing in a shallow manner where you're not getting enough oxygen? You're not belly breathing so that you're calming yourself down. Are your muscles tight? Are you clenching your teeth? People don't really pay attention to what's going on in their body enough to know that they have a heightened stress response going on. So I think it's so important for us to communicate with our patients to say, okay, when something happens that's stressful to you, tune in to your body. What is happening? The digestive process is the complete opposite of, you know, being active and responding to stressors. So people, it's like they say, you should never eat when you're stressed, you know, because it's just going to sit in your belly. It's not going to digest well because you need to be in a relaxed state for all those digestive juices to come in and do their job and break down your food. And I mean, the implications of it are so broad, you know, when we really think about just the digestive process alone of being conscious when you're eating and not watching TV and looking at your phone and just shoveling food in your mouth and not chewing adequately. You know, it's as foundational as it is to get outside and observe nature and, you know, light and dark cycles. It's being cognizant of what's happening to your body when you're eating your food. Are you chewing? Are you swallowing? Do you know when you're full? When your body's saying, you know, I've had enough? Or are you just going to keep eating until your plate's empty and then feel stuffed at the end because you were so out of touch with what was going on with your body to begin with? So yeah, chewing, being relaxed, and also being with people. I mean, that's why dining is like, it's a group experience. I always look, you know, to the French for that. Everybody, you know, years ago, there was this French paradox, right? Where we compared how the French would eat to how Americans would eat. And the French would consume a lot of fat, a lot of saturated fat in sauces and creams and, you know, a lot of variety of foods. But because they're revered for their food and having really good food, they take a lot of pride in their food and the preparation and it being an art form. And people would get together and dine and be in a relaxed state and enjoying each other's company. So it was a process. It wasn't a rush thing. So consuming food was gathering, which is a stress reliever for a lot of people. Getting together with your family and your friends and enjoying yourself creates a state of relaxation. You de-stress in the presence of the people that you love and care about. So having a meal with people that you care about should be a relaxing thing. Now, you know, obviously, if you're going to a family gathering and it's stressful for you, it's a whole different experience. But
you just read my mind.
Yes, I know. So, I mean, I can see you smiling there. So that's a different thing. So Thanksgiving and Christmas dinners and other holidays, we may have to put that out the window.
Because gotta get the digestive enzymes.
Yes, bring your digestive enzymes when you have, you know, stressful family dinners. But you know what I mean? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. And I've never heard the French paradox put that way. I've read about the French paradox. And to me, I've heard anything from, you know, well, their food just doesn't have as much gluten, or, you know, their dairy is cleaner, to I think somebody was like, well, the smoking keeps them thin. But, you know, what you're saying actually makes sense. It's like when you, and I think this is a European thing in general, which is when you eat, this is like a couple hours, right? Like you sit down and, you know, you're going to get an appetizer, you're going to get some wine and you're going to relax, you're going to talk to people. And then if you're trying to get in and out of like a European style restaurant in less than 2 hours, good luck. It is not happening. And so, you know, but they understand, I don't know if they understand anymore, but I know the traditional European cultures definitely understand this idea of, you said, I mean, the Spanish take a 3 hour nap in the middle of the day, right?
They do the Italians.
Yeah. They just shut everything down. Right.
Yes.
So eating is, and I don't know if the majority of people in this country don't eat when they're stressed. I think most people eat. The stress level is cranked up when there's food going in, whether it's at work, in the car, even like with their significant other, there's a fight. I think people only know eating when they're stressed.
Right. Well, and it's usually a rushed process here, you know, kind of like what you're saying. I mean, I think of European cultures, like I remember traveling to Italy many years ago. And as you were saying, all the stores and everything just shuts down for 3 hours in the afternoon because that's their biggest meal of the day. They go home, they dine with their family, they have a little siesta, and they de-stress, and then they come back later and they do more work when it's cooler outside, and they can finish up for the evening. But yeah, here, meals are kind of stressed. You know, they can be. I mean, we always make a point in our family. We have family dinner every night. We always have. And I feel that's an important component to family, where you sit down and reconnect with each other, keeping in touch, but it's usually going to be our best meal of the day because we're really taking more time to prepare it. And so, yeah, it's important. You know, I think it's definitely important to have that relaxed setting. We've kind of lost that, you know, I think, and that has happened just because of our culture and the need to have, you know, two people working and, you know, so, but we just have to find a way to simplify it so that we can still gather.
Yeah. I mean, I've been prioritizing gut health in myself for a couple, a couple of years now. It's so important. And whenever I work with people, it's really the foundation of where I kind of start everything. And, you know, I know myself when my gut is working right. And I know myself when my gut is not working right, when something gets thrown off. And it's an amazing phenomenon that, you know, that's why I got into this, because I personally experienced that feeling of mental clarity when the gut is working right, when you figure out digestion, when you sit down and you eat in a calm state and you're having regular bowel movements and you don't have crampy feelings, you're not bloated. But you know, what happens now is I know my gut is off. The biggest indicator for me is brain fog. And I think a lot of people are dealing with that, and it's getting misdiagnosed as depression, or it's getting misdiagnosed as fatigue. And this is where you start seeing the coffee come in and the energy drinks or even the stimulants, you know? So yeah, gut health is everything.
Oh, I would agree. You know, as a naturopath, we always start with the gut. And I remember a saying back when I was in school, which I thought was funny and very appropriate. They said, if you can't talk about stool, you're in the wrong school. And I mean, it's very true. You know, you have to ask people about their gut function and their bowel movements and getting specific, because what that looks like tells you something about their digestion. But I would agree wholeheartedly in that what is going on in your gut is going to affect your brain hugely. And it's, I mean, there's like a direct connection between your gut and your brain. We make a lot of our neurotransmitters in our gut. You know, 90% of the serotonin that we make is in our gut. So if you have poor gut function and the cells are inflamed and those functional units, which are the cells that line your gut, if they're inflamed, they're not going to be functioning properly. They're not going to function to make neurotransmitters. They're not going to function to make enzymes to absorb the nutrients from your food. They're going to become dysfunctional in their ability to keep things out of general circulation that shouldn't be there. So there's a lot that goes on with the gut. So starting with the gut is huge. You know, there's a lot of gut testing going on. So in addition to looking at salivary adrenal hormones and that is a basic functional program, looking at gut health and doing stool testing and looking at functional markers can make a big difference for people. Because I know that, as you were saying, like if my gut is not feeling good, I'm not feeling good up here either. I'm not feeling sharp mentally. I'm not feeling good emotionally. It's clear to me that there is a very strong connection there. And so working on the gut as a foundational aspect of creating health so that people can absorb the nutrients from their food, they don't get a lot of bloating or production of bad bacteria or yeast. You know, it is key. It is essential.
Yeah. And I think what you said there too was the importance of being able to fully absorb your nutrients. You know, we were talking a little bit before the podcast and I'm telling you, you know, I talk to a lot of people who they have issues with supplements, you know, and they're like, oh, this 5-HTP or this tryptophan or this, you know, lion's mane or this whatever supplement, that didn't work for me, you know? And then you start to dig deep into like what's really going on with this person. And it's like, well, is your gut even absorbing the nutrients, you know? And I could probably even, you could probably even tie that to the obesity epidemic, right? Where it's like people eat and they eat, but they don't absorb the minerals and the vitamins and the nutrients from the food. And so even though they have the calories, it's almost like cardboard in the body. It's like the body hasn't filled the quota for vitamin C or B12 or, you know, zinc or whatever it is. And so the body's still craving these nutrients. And so you just keep eating and eating. And before you know it, you're bloated, you're tired, and you have not accomplished, you know, really the goal of eating, which is to nourish the body.
Right. No, I would agree with that. And that there's so much we have to do in looking at digestive function. And there's so many things that can go wrong when it's not working properly, you know, from just like feeling uncomfortable and having brain fog, as you had mentioned, to the more extreme aspect of that, where you have some serious mental health disorders as a result of having poor gut function. And then sadly, you know, a lot of people are put on medications to address these neurotransmitter imbalances, supposedly, that are usually only designed for short-term use, that may or may not have some impact, but long-term use does not address the problem. And I feel so badly for people who don't get that gut issue addressed early on, because they're on medications that they're just transitioning to higher dosages, or they're transitioning to a different medication. And so there's huge room for like functional medicine in psychiatry and psychology to try to utilize some of this whole body approach to try and address mental health disorders and just optimizing brain function to begin with. Because again, if we don't start with the foundations, just taking a single supplement that makes all of these promises may or may not have any effect. It may have some effect. That effect may wear off over time because you haven't addressed the real problem, or it may have no effect at all because there's so many other problems that need to be addressed before this particular supplement, which promises to do this specific thing, could even function in your body because your body is so out of balance to begin with.
Yeah. And then comes the whole issue of, okay, well, if you just start, you know, going whole hog on like L-tyrosine or something, you know, or 5-HTP, and your body is not processing that correctly, it's like, well, now you've just completely overdone it in the wrong direction, right? You know, because serotonin syndrome is real. You know, excess tyrosine turns into excess dopamine, which, you know, that's the base of something like Parkinson's, you know, and you could have too much acetylcholine in your brain. You know, I worry about people who just jump into the supplements too fast and don't do, I mean, that's the whole point of this channel, is to talk about exactly what you're saying, which is going at the foundations. Because look, like when you hit the foundation, right, when you get your gut working, if that's all you do and your gut is like popping serotonin, it's popping dopamine, it's absorbing nutrients, you're getting the selenium and the zinc and the magnesium from the food that you're eating, and you're getting the B. I mean, it's a game changer. And sure, maybe you pop on a, you know, a multivitamin on top of that or something, and just to kind of put the cherry on top for a little extra juice. But I mean, until you really get to the root cause of your issue, I mean, you're never going to see that sustained optimization.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, a lot of people do neurotransmitter testing and base a lot of their therapy off of it. So they're kind of tweaking and dialing in certain amino acids based on neurotransmitter testing, perhaps without doing the foundational work. And it has the same result that you were just talking about. You know, you don't know which direction you're pushing somebody. And that neurotransmitter test may be conditional to what is going on in other areas of their body. So if we start trying to dial in neurotransmitters through amino acid supplementation inappropriately, you could potentially make somebody worse. And as you say, there are people out there saying, well, you know, I have brain fog, or I have depression or anxiety, so I'm going to dose up on these three amino acids. And so you're flooding pathways, you're over flooding one pathway and leaving other pathways deficient. That's not balanced. And so again, too, in doing neurotransmitter testing, if you have imbalances going on, you shouldn't be addressing it with other neurotransmitters. You should be saying why. Why are there imbalances there? And dial it back, you know, going back to the foundations of looking at gut function and absorption and potentially leaky gut, perhaps looking at nutrient testing where you can see if they've got some frank deficiencies. Whereas, you know, if you have deficiencies in certain minerals, that's the rate limiting step for a lot of reactions that need to occur at a biochemical level. If you just don't have the nutrients, or you're low in zinc, which mediates a lot of biochemical pathways, things just aren't going to happen. And so that's where the functional foundational stuff comes in, rather than, again, throwing supplements in because it sounds like a good idea.
Right. And then somebody hears you say, well, if you're low in zinc, this, and then they go, well, I'll just start taking a zinc supplement. And they go, oh, no. Because now you've got these balances in minerals that you have to keep straight.
Yes.
And it's too much. I mean, it's too much for me to try to remember.
Right.
But for, you know, somebody who's not in this every day, it's you know, it's difficult. But we've kind of run up against time here, but I really appreciate your time. I think we had a really fascinating conversation. I think we just barely scratched the surface. If there's someone who's listening who's like, I want to work with Dr. Tracy, where can they find you? Can they contact you? Can they look at your work anywhere online? Where would you direct somebody?
Well, we have a website, mysunrisecenter.com, and Facebook pages. We have Sunrise Functional Medicine through Facebook, Integrative Medicine Academy through Facebook. Integrative Medicine Academy is also a website where my partner and I have put together some functional medicine courses that can be taken online. We also, for people out there who are interested in doing some lab testing, but they don't have access to a functional medicine or naturopathic practitioner where they are, they can go to labtestsplus.com, where they can access a whole variety of different kinds of functional medicine testing. And in addition to having access to the tests, you also get a written interpretation from either Dr. Wohler or myself. So we have that available, and just our practice website. So if somebody is interested in consulting, going to mysunrisecenter.com and either sending an email or calling directly, we can certainly give them some information.
Before you sign off, do you have anything you want to leave people with? Any thoughts that have bubbled up over the last 45 minutes or so? Any parting words?
I think going back to the idea of stress, you know, when we were talking about like self-awareness, I think that is key for a lot of people, especially now, you know, within the COVID crisis and lots of things going on in our world that, you know, is a big upheaval and a lot of change going on. And people don't know the possible outcome, and they feel a lot of internal stress. And sometimes they really don't know why they're feeling stressed. And so I think an acknowledgement of that, but also finding ways to deal with certain stressors, getting outside, going for a walk, the things that we talked about before, not getting on your phone or your computer right away when you wake up in the morning, is to give yourself a little bit of space to ease into your day with a different mindset so that perhaps you can deal with stressors in a better way. And tune in a bit, take a deep breath. It's all going to be okay.
There you go. That's how we'll leave it off. Okay. Dr. Trancatella, thank you so much for your time. This was an amazing podcast, and I'm so excited for people to hear this. Thank you so much for joining me.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And thank you, viewer and listener, for listening and watching. For more, be sure to check out holisticnootropics.com for all the show notes to this podcast. Check out holisticnootropics.com/podcast. We'll catch you on the next one.
Thanks for listening. For more brain-boosting info, in-depth articles, and show notes, check out holisticnootropics.com.